The West Live.
The West Live.
Brought to you by the State School Teachers Union campaign to fix WA's teacher shortage.
West Aussies have been wandering out yonder and many have stayed in Airbnbs. But what impact has that had on local tourism operators? Well, the state government has put the accommodation sharing platform in the crosshairs with new legislation designed to cap its use in WA. Joining me now to help us understand the issue is the CEO of the Tourism Council of WA, Evan Hall. Good morning, Evan. Welcome back to the show.
Yeah, good morning, Ben.
And so I'm guessing that many tourism operators in WA will see this proposal from the state government that would cap the number of nights a property could be rented on Airbnb to just 60 a year as a good move.
The proposed legislation and planning guidelines wouldn't actually work that way. In essence, if you had a residential property under the proposal, you could rent it out for up to 60 days without getting permission. It's just if you went over 60 days, you'd have to get a development approval. So we're quite concerned about this. We think, in essence, if you stop being a residential property and start being a commercial short-term accommodation property, then you should go through the same approval process as everybody else.
Yeah, right. And so currently, what is the situation when it comes to the impact Airbnb has on the tourism, like the mainstream tourism operators in regional areas?
I think the real challenge with Airbnb, and we've particularly seen this over the last 2 years because of COVID, is once a property moves out of being residential and you just let it out for just one night or just 1 week in the middle of the school holidays, that property is no longer available for someone to take up a residential tenancy. So the real impact on the tourism industry has been in towns around Margaret River and down the southwest that we simply don't have enough residential rental accommodation for our workers. So one of the big reasons why we have worker shortages in the southwest and much of WA is that all the places where they would normally stay and rent to work through the season are in fact now on Airbnb, and they're available for one night. And as soon as they're available for one night, no one can stay there as a resident. And that's the real challenge that we have, is basically the loss of all this residential properties. It's what we call the Venice effect, when tourism just starts to overwhelm a town and the residents get pushed out and you can't get anywhere to stay. And it's not what we want to happen to the southwest or any part of WA.
Yeah, well, with the borders being closed and no one able to leave, it's been a license to print money, I'm sure, for people who had holiday homes or investment properties that maybe previously had been rented out to, as you say, people who work in the hospitality or tourism industries in those towns. The flip side of this, I guess, is Airbnb does offer, used to offer affordable accommodation to allow people to get into these areas, and some tourism operators and businesses have benefited from that. Has it always been a bit of a sort of an awkward relationship with the tourism industry and this platform?
Not really. I mean, I think it's a bit of a myth that it's affordable. In essence, you see the prices on Airbnb, they pretty much charge the same rates as if you're going into commercial. To be fair, it did offer some larger accommodation for families, with multiple bedrooms. Mm. But it is a myth that it's in some ways cheaper. But I think the real loss is just how many residential properties are now simply unavailable, and you only have to be let out for one night, and that means you can't for a short term overnight stay, and you do that, and then suddenly you can't put it under a lease for a 3 month lease or a 6 month lease or a 12 month lease, because nobody wants to live in a home where you get kicked out over school holidays so that someone can make more money on a short-term rentals. So that's been the real impact. It's bad for the towns, and therefore at the end of the day it's bad for tourism. And it's not just hospitality workers. We have school teachers can't get rental accommodation. Anyone else moving into town to provide those essential community services can't get the short-term accommodation, rental accommodation either. So it has a negative effect on the destination when it's running rampant. So we're very happy with the proposed guidelines, because it does set up a registration system, so people will have to record that they're not using it for residential and using it for commercial purposes, and it does allow local governments to say, this much and no more, or not in this area, when it comes to seeing what is property, zoned residential and built for residential purposes suddenly coming in for commercial gain.
Yeah, and the other thing, I guess, to mention, which doesn't really fall under the purview of tourism, but I guess the proposed legislation would offer, I guess, a bit more control over where these properties are operating, because we know they can be used for pretty wild parties at times, and certainly in some of those residential areas in these towns, having people moving in and out on a daily basis is not really great for the amenity of the area. So I don't know if you have an opinion on that.
Well, certainly the old party houses. It's not just bad for the neighbours; it's bad for the owner of the property too. And that's a big part of the risk that comes because it's unmanaged. So I think we want to draw a clear distinction between what has been called hosted accommodation, where somebody owns their house and is renting out a room out the back or a studio out the back. That's fantastic. It provides something that's been looked after and hosted and managed, so you know the party doesn't get out of control or doesn't turn into a party. But more importantly, it's still residential housing. There's still somebody living there, and you're not taking away from the places where people can live. It's when you get a house that was built for residential purposes, next door to everybody else in a quiet residential street, and the owner suddenly realises, well, I can make more money if I charge high rates during school holidays than if I let it out for 6 months for a tenant. And then suddenly you've lost the tenant, you've lost that residential property, and what you've got is tourism right in the middle of the suburb where it's probably not suited. So we think this is well overdue, and we do need to see these guidelines implemented. And really, it should be up to local government to work out what's best for that local town.
Mm. Well, this position paper from the state government is currently seeking public feedback, so we'll wait and see what happens with that process. One thing we don't have to wait and see is whether or not Perth is going to get an ashes test. It's official, we're not going to get one. Did that come as a blow to tourism businesses in the CBD in particular?
Yeah, we were looking forward to it. The city is dead. There's no two ways around it. CBD hotels have almost no occupancy, particularly midweek. Some activity on the weekend, but basically it's dead quiet. You can tell walking around the streets that there's not enough life in town. All that turned around when we got the AFL Grand Final, and we had a great weekend, and people went out and stayed overnight in the hotels and did things in the city, and that was fantastic. And we were looking forward to the same with the Ashes, but of course that's gone now. And so it's unfortunately these big events are about the only respite for our tourism businesses in the heart of town, which is where most of our businesses and jobs and hotel rooms are. And it's been dead quiet. We need these major events. So we can't wait till we get a date for the border so we can try and keep hold of the events that we still have planned for 2022.
Yeah, and assuming that date arrives in late January, early February, as has been hinted, the government has really talked up this plan to mount a marketing campaign to bring tourism back to WA and the CBD. How confident are you they'll get that message right?
I think the industry is really going to take the lead here. I think the trick for us is not to be promoting WA, because I'm not sure that's really going to be all that appealing. Might even, to be frank, a bit on the nose on the East Coast. But if you start marketing Rottnest Island, Margaret River, Swan Valley, all the great things that we have to offer, I think we'll get back in business pretty soon. I think the key for us is events. It's what's going to get people back over from the east and from overseas. For example, hopefully we'll have the one day international with New Zealand on the 30th. For that to happen, the borders will pretty much have to be open on the 28th of January. So we've got fingers crossed on that one. And people are going to turn up for that as soon as we let them. So it's really about keeping the events that we've got scheduled for next year. And when we get the visiting friends and relatives coming over, which will certainly be the first wave of tourists, we want to make sure that Western Australians take them out for a good time and do all those tours and activities, particularly in the heart of Perth, that have been a bit quiet over the last 2 years.
You'll see how many people can do the zip line down Matagara Bridge. But it sounds like, Evan, that you'd definitely support the state government dipping into its pocket, spending some of that massive surplus on securing some of these big-ticket events.
Absolutely. So they've announced $185 million. That's money going into aviation because we've got to bring back particularly the international airlines, and we've got to make sure we bring back at least the same number of services that we used to get from the East Coast. I think we've got to bear in mind there's hardly any aviation services running between Western Australia and the East Coast at the moment. So if there's no airlines, there's nothing to book, then they can't come. So we need to get all those aviation capacity back. We need to market to get the visitors back, and we need to get the students back. But the big one, and I think this is where we'll probably need to get more funding in, not just for 2022, but for the next couple of years, is to secure all those marquee events that we've shown that we can do so well. The AFL Grand Final just absolutely showed the rest of Australia that we are a world-class major event destination, and we should be pitching to every English Premier League team, every American baseball team, get those big name events into Perth, and very, very quickly people will forget about the past and they'll go, these are the events I want to go to. And when they come here, that's when they'll experience what a great town Perth is and what a fantastic destination we have here in WA. So it's really securing those events over the next couple of years, which is critical.
Yeah, it sounds like a pretty good plan to me. CEO of the Tourism Council of WA, Evan Hall, thanks as always for joining us on the West Live.
Thanks, Ben.